Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Welcome into another edition of the JMU Sports News Podcast. I'm Bennett Conlin. I'm joined by Jack Fitzpatrick. We're previewing a JMU football second round playoff matchup with Southeastern Louisiana, SLU.
SLU, get it right. SLU.
Sure I get that right, respectfully as well, Jack. But I guess, what are your thoughts going into this one? I feel like I'm way too into it already. I'm already trying to analyze the game. We don't have like a slow open, but
yeah, we're going way too slow. We're going way too fast into it. I mean, it is playoff week. We saw a great first round of matchups. Our bets. I have to promo our own our other podcast.
Oh my god, this is a way different slow opening than I expected.
No, we just have another podcast we do for another job of mine, and we brought over, and we had best bets, and man, were we on fire, and it made the weekend a lot of fun. And DRF College Sports Podcast, find us wherever you listen to podcasts.
And I think from an FCS level, we can talk quickly about first rounders. I think we both loved South Dakota State.
Love South Dakota, and they crushed UC Davis.
They crushed, and I don't know what the Eastern Washington line was, but they also, what did they win by, 10?
Something like that, but they learned how to play defense, apparently.
The Big Sky's actually played some pretty good defense this year, surprisingly.
Another game that was surprising to me, Southern Illinois took down South Dakota.
They had been slumping, yeah. When they play their best, they can do some good things. I think they had 3 interceptions in that game. I think North Dakota State will still cruise to the semis, but we'll see.
Holy Cross with the fantastic one over Sacred Heart. Everyone had that one chalked as the must-watch game of the weekend.
There were some like dramatics. Like they had a really late touchdown pass.
Yeah,
there was
like a Hail Mary with 10 seconds left. Yeah.
Yeah, there's another game with like a big guy touchdown that was really competitive. And it's really cool to see those teams battling for the right to get absolutely demolished by a seed.
That's so true. And before we jump into anything further, just a quick little housekeeping stuff. Bet Online is back and better than ever. A new web interface for the rest of the NBA season and more props, odds, and lines than ever before. Bet Online remains your number one spot for all the basketball and football action this season. Head to the new updated desktop or mobile website to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Just use our promo code BLEAV, BLEAV 50. To receive your bonus. That's Believe 50. From basketball, football, NHL, boxing, and UFC, right to your favorite Vegas casino games, because I know I love pulling the slots on a computer. Don't wait to take advantage of all the amazing offers available for the 2021 season. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet all your favorite sports. BetOnline, where the game starts. And I didn't know my little throwaway line in there would get Bennett laughing so much, but it makes me feel good about myself.
Game off is super sarcastic. Thought you were kidding. It is pretty fun though. Anyway.
Oh, I was being very sarcastic. Oh,
okay.
Extreme sarcasm. Because who wants to, like, the whole point of pulling slots? I mean, I've never played a Vegas casino.
What is it? You actually pull them yourself?
Yeah, isn't that the fun part? Here's the patented JMU Sports News slow open, but
yeah, I'm already off to a rough start where I was like, what are your thoughts
on the game? What are your thoughts on everything? No, so yeah, we talked about the Towson game, I think, last week. And so that game, we're all the way into the playoffs. ESPN Plus, you can cancel Flow Sports now at this point. Unless you want to watch basketball, then don't cancel Flow Sports.
Unless you want to watch basketball. Which, yes.
I still obsessively do. And I think Bennett even bought the $7 CUSA TVs one
that,
time.
When we get to basketball, remind me to talk about the CUSA announcer. Okay. Because that guy was electric.
So, as we just ramble on and on, we brought on a very special guest today, Rob DeArmond. Did I pronounce
it? Yep, that's correct.
Awesome. He's the beat writer for Southeastern Louisiana, and he does an awesome job. We'll get to him in just a couple of minutes. But first, we'll kind of talk about the game, what we're expecting out of it. And since Bennett is so excited to talk about this game, I'm going to let him just take it over.
Yeah, so they, Southeastern Louisiana, the Lions.
SLU.
We're an alliance thing right now. They have a quarterback named Cole Kelly who started his career at Arkansas. He's four star. He is a beast. He's 6'7", like 260. He can run. He can throw. I think he has 58 total touchdowns this year. It's like 40 2 passing and 16 rushing or something. So he's a true dual threat. He's a really good player. Obviously a strong, powerful runner. We'll get into that later with Rob. But I mean, the thing for me that kind of stands out is like, all right, Southeastern Louisiana has arguably the best offense in the country, but the defense is maybe not even top 100. So the way I view it is like,
you know exactly where they rank too. You know, they're not top 100. They're 111.
They're not really under, you would be hard pressed to find a metric where they're like top 100. So they're not great defensively. You could argue they're bad defensively. Offensively, they're incredibly potent. A lot of people are quick to, Jamie fans are quick to be like, well, who'd they play? Okay, they didn't really play great teams, but they lead the nation in scoring. If you use ESPN SP Plus, it's kind of an analytic metric there that takes, it should take into account sort of who you're playing and all these different results, things like that. They're still the top offense in the country. So Cole Kelly's no joke. The offense is no joke. But I think JMU is a more complete team, which is why I think some fans, maybe myself included, think that it's not unreasonable to expect JMU to win by double digits.
I think everything has to go perfectly right for Southeastern to have a chance. This offense is really good. There's no getting around that. This is the best offense by 15 miles that JMU has faced this season. Best quarterback they faced probably since they faced Trey Lance in the national championship a few years ago. Like, this is going to be a test for the defense. I've been low on the secondary all season. I'm still worried about the secondary. If the defensive line can't get in Cole Kelly's face within a second and a half, and Southeastern knows how to scheme up, which it sounds like after our talk with Rob, it sounds like they'll know how to kind of attack and the plan of attack. So I'm worried about that. But their defense is just so bad that I don't know if Southeastern will be able to score at the same rate JMU will.
Yeah, I think that's kind of where JMU's got the edge, right? Is it's a Southeastern team that gives up 275 passing yards a game. They've allowed 31 touchdown passes. I think they do have 17 interceptions, so maybe they've been a little opportunistic at times. But Cole Johnson's got 32 touchdown passes and only 2 interceptions. Wells and Thornton are 2 of the best receivers in the FCS. It's kind of hard to come up with a scenario where SLU is able to stop James Madison's offense. So I think that's kind of the thing that stands out the most to me, maybe.
And against Nichols, which was the regular season finale for Southeastern, they allowed over 6 yards per carry to a Nichols team. That isn't necessarily fantastic this season, if I'm not mistaken. And I know it's been a beaten up running back room. They haven't produced to the level we all kind of expected. We all wanted them to. But if you give them the opportunities, looking at Austin Douglas, Solomon Van Horst, and Latrell Palmer, if you give them the opportunities, I think they'll take advantage of it and kind of run all over them when the pass isn't. But the pass is going to be working. So do you even need to run it? Like,
I think JMU's got a chance to score a lot. I will say Cignetti's teams, I think they've only allowed 30 points twice in his tenure. So they've only given up 30 or more points twice with Kurt Cignetti as the head coach. I think Southeastern has a really good chance to score 30 or more. It could definitely be the third time in the Cignetti tenure that a team has scored 30 plus on JMU. But you look a couple years ago, and this isn't the exact same Southeastern team, but they got knocked out of the playoffs against Montana in a game that they lost 73-28, right? So
is that the same year that they beat Villanova?
They beat Villanova 45-44, and then I believe they lost 73-28 the following week. So I think that's the recipe for them, is like they're going to need to win a game like 45-42 to beat JMU with like a couple timely turnovers and things like that. If JMU's defense can get a few stops and the Dukes can stop kicking red zone field goals, like they do have a chance to kind of pull away and I think win it by double digits. Although this team, this Southeastern team, is still very competent and capable. Like, it's a playoff game. It's a test for sure.
Yeah, and they're a top 20 team in the nation. I believe they're number 18 ranking-wise. So they're nothing to, like, sniff, like, put your nose up at. They're a good team, and they're an elite offense. Like, there's no getting around that. But the thing is, so is JMU. JMU's a top 15 offense in the FCS, and they also have a top 15 defense, where Southeastern just doesn't have that. So do you want to bring in Rob, talk to him a little bit about this game and what he expects out of it?
Yeah, Rob was great. He gives us some really good insights. I think fans will enjoy it because you can just look at the numbers pretty easily of Southeastern, but to get a little bit of the bigger picture from someone who's been following them for decades is certainly valuable.
Yeah, so take it away, Bennett. And a quick word from one of our sponsors, Lightbox. Say goodbye to dull gifts. Lightbox lab-grown diamonds are the brightest gift of the year. Using cutting-edge technology and innovative techniques, they've cracked the science of sparkle, creating the highest quality lab-grown diamonds you can find at a light price, $800 per carat. They have the same chemical makeup of natural diamonds, but just are grown in a lab. Because of their process, they can create stones in blush, pink, and beautiful blue, as well as classic white. Lightbox lab-grown diamonds are the gift they'll never want to take off, priced so they won't have to. They really do make any outfit sparkle. Visit lightboxjewelry.com to add sparkle to your holiday shopping. That's lightboxjewelry.com. Lightbox diamonds. Never a dull moment.
Yeah, Jack, we're really excited to welcome in Rob DeArmond. He is well-versed in Southeastern Louisiana football. So, Rob, thank you for joining us. And we talked a little bit before we went online here about your credentials, and I think you'll describe them better than me. So I'd love you to tell our listeners kind of how you came into your current job and how long you followed Southeastern Louisiana's football program.
First of all, thanks for reaching out. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it. I think this is one of those things where we're both trying to learn more about the teams our teams are playing, just to figure out what's going on. I grew up in Hammond. I still live in Hammond, Louisiana. Went to Southeastern. Used to watch Southeastern football games. Stadium and the campus is not too far from my house. They dropped football in 1985, and they brought it back in the early 2000s. At that point, I was working at the Daily Star in Hammond, so I've covered Southeastern football, I guess, since it's come back in some way, shape, or form for the Daily Star. Also did a little bit for the Advocate in Baton Rouge during my time there, and currently I'm at the Livingston Parish News as a sports editor here. So I guess you could say it's close to 20 years covering Southeastern football.
Yeah, I mean, quite the credentials. So we were really excited when we kind of scrolled through Twitter and looked for some Southeastern Louisiana stuff, saw you, and figured you'd be a good person to have on. We are recording this on a Monday, and Rob, it's your birthday, so we do want to say happy birthday.
I appreciate it. I appreciate it. I won't tell you how old I am, but I appreciate it. Thanks.
Awesome. So I guess we'll dive right in, at least from sort of my really basic JMU fan perspective. I look up Southeastern Louisiana and I see the offensive numbers, and as a JMU fan, I'm slightly terrified. So I guess, what can you tell us about this offense and Cole Kelly at quarterback that sort of makes this unit so dynamic?
It's really, you hit it on the head. It's dynamic and what they're able to do with Cole at quarterback. I'll go back a couple of years. When he came in, Chasen Virgil was a starting quarterback. And I think that was the last time that Southeastern made the playoffs. But they still found ways to get Cole involved in the offense, and they had certain packages that they would run. And he's such a big guy, you know, about 6'8" or so. So it was mostly running plays. And I tell people this: if I were that defensive back, or I were that line, he's a large man. If I saw him coming at me, I think Deion Sanders used to call those business decisions. I'm making a business decision on that. Literally, they call a draw and he's going to go forward. He's getting at least 3 yards just by falling forward. And that's how it kind of evolved, getting Colin involved in the schemes and what they were doing. When Chasen Virgil graduates, Cole takes over, and kind of what helps is that, he's embraced that part of being the leader of the team. If something goes wrong, he's going to be the first guy to say, "Hey, that's on me. It's my," and it might not have anything to do with him, but he's going to say, it's my fault. We have to fix things. And I think what helped also was having the spring season to kind of, I don't want to say get used to things, and then having this fall season come back so quickly behind it. So they've just been able to build on what they were able to do in the spring.
Yeah, that's great insight into what Southeastern is, that what their quarterback brings. Because when we were looking at the roster and you see a 6'7 QB, 6'8 QB, as fans, as medium people, we don't really know how to digest that. You don't see that a lot. I think the last tall quarterback that I remember playing was Brock Osweiler. So it's, and that was a very different frame, very different setup than what Cole Kelly brings to the table. But flipping to the other side of the ball, the defense, it seems like the defense has kind of been the Achilles heel of this team, at least scrolling through the schedules, kind of looking at their results, what's happened this season. Is it fair to say the defense has kind of been their weaker point so far this season?
I don't know if I call it a weaker point. They are playing a lot of young players right now. Orlando Jordan, who's an All-American, has been out injured for most of the year. And what they've been able to kind of develop, they got some veteran players in there, but a lot of guys are really young on the back end. I guess the positive coming out of the Florida A&M game for them is that the defense probably played its most complete, at least half, if not game, against Florida A&M. They held them to 98 yards of total offense in the first half. Really got some things going there. And that was coming off of that Nichols game. They lose by 3 points, and Nichols really ran the ball. That was the best we'd seen a team run against Southeastern's defense, which was really a point of emphasis going in. You know, they said we've got to do some things to so we can see what's going on and try to fix those things. And at the same time, Coach Selfo said it's kind of like one of those things where the guys go back and they watch that film from Nichols, and it was like the light bulb went off and they said, okay, we see what we're not doing correctly. We see what we need to fix, so let's go fix it. And I think they, you know, obviously want to use that as a springboard going into this matchup this week.
For sure. I was interested, too, in the schedule because I guess, what is it, the Southland's got kind of a weird mix of teams. So it seems like they played some teams multiple times. I guess, how did they sort of navigate what appeared to be a strange season in terms of who they played and all that good stuff?
That's been kind of the question because you don't see that. I don't think I've ever seen that when they first came out. It happened because so many teams are leaving the Southland. Right. They can't turn those matchups into single games. So they said, okay, what we'll do this year, all the Louisiana teams are going to play each other twice. Which you look at it and say, okay, that's cool, you know. So, but then at the same time, never been done before. And what happens is inevitably things change in between those games. You know, you may play them and then 3 weeks later you're playing them again, but you might have, you know, lineup changes, injuries. It's all going to happen. So that's been kind of the navigating, you know, kind of navigating through it and kind of learning your way, which has been kind of interesting for the team itself. And Coach Selfo has always been kind of like, hey, look, it's not the same thing. You know, this is a totally different animal, totally different team on both sides for us and for them. And he's done that with each one of those Southland teams that they play. At least within state, I should say.
Gotcha. That makes sense. I was interested, too. The coaching staff certainly seems like they've had success in the past at other stops. What can you tell us about the head coach and some of the assistants? It certainly seems like a group that's not only talented, but maybe a really well-coached group, too.
Yeah, Coach Selfo's had some NFL experience, you know, some college experience. And the thing that really strikes me about the coaching staff and what they're trying to do, they really are trying to build a family-type atmosphere there where it's not just about football. You know, we want to come in and we want to – sure, we want to get you the guys. But they, you know, they want to win championships. They want to get the academics going. And I think that's the biggest thing with all of them. And he's got a lot of coaches who have Louisiana ties. He's made a point that, you know, when he came in, he said, hey, we want to start here in Hammond with our recruiting and work our way out. And that's what they've done. That's how they've kind of built this thing.
Jack, you got anything else?
I didn't know if you're going anything there. Yeah, I mean, so the last time that Southeastern kind of probably caught the attention of CAA fans and JMU fans was their big game. Was it the 20, the years are all messed up after COVID. I think the 2018 or 2019 playoff run when they had a, they overcame
19.
Yes. 19. When they beat 19. Villanova and kind of that thriller.
That was a great game.
Yeah. Fantastic. That was a great game. So that was the last time JMU fans kind of had any idea of who Southeastern was, and now sitting in a second round matchup with them. Is there any kind of constants from that team that have rolled over to this season, or is it practically a completely new team with Cole Kelly?
It's funny because that's one of the questions that that was asked today. I went to the presser today, and that was one of the questions of it was kind of a two-parter between myself and another reporter that was there. And so you ask, you know, what changes? And he says, at this point, we got some of the same players on the same team, but they're at different points in their lives now. That was 2 years ago. So yeah. You hope that they've matured and they've gotten better. And from a coaching standpoint, it was one of those things where Coach Selfo said, that was the first time for me. I'd never been through some of this stuff. So at this point now, we've got some of that logistics stuff. You've got to look at, you know, travel and, you know, how do we get there? What are we doing when we get there? He said all of that stuff's kind of taken care of. And that's stuff that maybe he said maybe I wasn't thinking about, or maybe you don't, you know, put a premium on when you're doing it, you know. The other part of it was you're going in there and you start, he said he walked out, you know, first playoff game there, kind of looked around, looked at the other team, just, and he said, their guys are bigger than our guys. Our guys don't look like their guys. So that was a point of emphasis for him. It's like, okay, this is what we need to do to get ourselves better to where we can compete with these teams. And that's what they've done. It's a concerted effort. Coach Selfo has said, you know, many times that this is why I came to Southeastern. This is why we're here, to be playing in these national games, to put the national spotlight on this program, and so people know where Southeastern is.
This is – kind of a two-parter question then from there. Since you've been covering Southeastern since when they brought back the football program in 2001, is this the best team that you've seen on the field since then? And then secondarily, is this a team that you think can upset JMU here in the second round?
That's a great question. In 2013-2014, Brian Bennett was a quarterback. That was Ron Roberts was coaching. They went back to back there and made the playoffs. So this is the fourth time in school history. But probably in terms of just, I tell people we get spoiled, you know, watching this offense every week. And I mean, I'd probably have to say this is probably the most prolific in terms of offense and what they've been able to do every week that we've seen. We get spoiled because it's just like, you look at it and you go, that's another game, you know, and then, you know, you hear Coach talk about, and you look at the offensive numbers they were able to put up last week, and Coach Selfo said, we're not happy because they got into, I guess, a lull there in the second half, and, you know, they weren't scoring as much. But he said, you know, at this point, you get down there and you have to score. We don't want to trade field goals, you know, and he mentioned it today. If you're not scoring touchdowns like that against a team like JMU, you've missed the opportunity. Because he said that they'll probably come back and cash in on something where we weren't able to score. They're very well, very aware of that. That's going to be a point of emphasis this week in practice, I know.
Yeah, I guess kind of going off of that, what do you think are some of the keys to the game from Southeastern's perspective? And you certainly don't have to, but if you want to give us a score prediction or some stuff that kind of goes along with that, we'd certainly love to hear your insights.
I'm just looking at numbers here, and they're really similar on both sides for both JMU and Southeastern. Kind of expecting a close game. It's playoffs, you know. You kind of don't know which way to kind of lean. I know JMU is going to be the home team here. But I know for Southeastern, it's going to be – they've been able to get off to fast starts. That's going to be part of it, I think. Get off to fast starts. They've been also this past game. They were also able to put a couple of long drives in, and there weren't really chunk plays. It was some of those slow, methodical drives, and they're still able to score. I think that might help them at some point during that game too, if they could put one or two of those together. And defensively, like I said before, it's going to be kind of keeping that momentum going and getting those young kids are starting to see. Hey, man, we know what we're supposed to be doing. And I think if they can carry that momentum over, that's obviously going to help them.
Yeah, for sure. I think South Dakota State had a great opening round game against UC Davis. But other than that, I think Southeastern's got to be one of the most impressive first round performances, like you had mentioned. I think what it was 38-0 before Florida A&M kind of scored a couple of garbage time touchdowns.
Both of those touchdowns came late, and this is not knocking Florida A&M at all. Just those Southeastern was starting to sub people in on both sides of the ball, and they got two late scores. It was 24-0 at halftime, and Southeastern also missed two field goals in that game too. So, it could have been a bigger score there.
Yeah, I know JMU fans are maybe thinking they'll beat up on the defense, but looks like they, pitched a shutout for like 55 minutes of the game. So it's a really good Southeastern team. I'm pretty thrilled for this matchup. I know Jack is too. And Jack, you got anything else?
No, that's it. I mean, I'm looking forward to it. I'm, as a person who's watched JMU play against mobile quarterbacks, against great quarterbacks, that's been their Achilles heel probably since they played Trey Lance in the national championship. So I'm a little worried about this matchup. I think Cole Kelly might have himself one of the best games he's probably had of his career.
The physically, a lot of people kind of compare Cole to Ben Roethlisberger.
Good.
When you see him, that's what that's kind of when you see him. Like I said, he walks into a room and he's a large man. He's so big guy at quarterback. I'm like you guys. I'm really excited for this just to see what happens, because just looking at it on paper, these teams are on paper statistically really similar in what they do. And I think it's going to be a fantastic matchup.
Yeah. I mean, Jack has always talked in the past about how JMU men's basketball doesn't have much size. We would love for a Cole Kelly size kid on the basketball team.
Yeah. If he still has any eligibility left for basketball, JMU will gladly take his grad transfer years and put him down on the post, but it's a different podcast.
Yeah. Awesome though, Rob, we really appreciate you joining us. Great to hear your insights. We certainly would not have been able to know a lot of these things unless you came on. So thanks so much for carving out 15 minutes of your day.
Hey, thanks for having me. Thanks for reaching out, and we'll stay in touch, guys.
For sure. Enjoy the week and enjoy the birthday.
I'm going to try. It's working. It's working. It's still working. So, got to do it. Got to get it done.
Of course. Of course.
Thank you so much, Rob, for coming on, talking to us about some Southeastern Louisiana football. It's going to be a great game. I think Cole Kelly's going to absolutely have himself a career day. I think for Southeastern, though, Rob was talking about how it might be close and things of that nature. I think for it to be close and for Southeastern Louisiana to have any type of shot, they're going to need to start quick. And I think he mentioned that in his keys to the game. They need to start quick as they have kind of a history of doing. But they also need to force a turnover early, or how JMU tends to shoot itself in the foot. They need something like that to happen early on in the game. And if they can be up like 21-3 at the first quarter, like JMU settles for a field goal to start the game 3-0, and then Southeastern touchdown, touchdown, turnover, touchdown, and all of a sudden you're looking at 21-3 game or something to that effect. That's the only way to meet Southeastern Louisiana has a shot in this game.
JMU, this is kind of going way back, but JMU had a disastrous start in 2015, the playoff loss to Colgate, where like they were getting smacked when they had Brian Shore that year.
Kind of like in 2018 when they had a disastrous start to that Colgate game.
They were okay in that one. They started pretty strong in that Colgate game and then like faded really hard.
They did. They started that game. Wow, we're really going off the rails. They started that game so well where we honestly thought they were about to win like 50-7.
That's what I thought. They were getting kind of smoked in 2015 and then really rallied back, but didn't end up winning the game. So that's kind of the Southeastern blueprint, I think, is if you can get up early, score a bunch of points and win a shootout. The issue there is that JMU's defense in 2015 sucked, and this year's defense is really talented with a really good defensive line. So I don't know. I have a hard time seeing it being within a field goal. I think that would be challenging, but I still think this SLU team is really, really talented. They're really gifted, so I do think it has a chance to be more interesting than some JMU fans are maybe expecting. I feel like they're discounting them a little more than they should.
Yeah, definitely shouldn't discount them. The defense makes it a hard game for them to win, but the offense is going to make this a very exciting game. So what's your prediction? Kind of break it down for me. What do you think is going to happen in this game?
I mean, we've talked about Kurt Cignetti getting 100 points in a game, and now feels like the time to do it. Now, I think JMU's got a legitimate chance to score 50, though. So it kind of, you mentioned too, it reminded you maybe a little bit of the Monmouth game. That's one where I think that was the most points ever scored under Cignetti was that Monmouth game.
Yeah.
When they get 66 or something?
Something like that. And we all went into that game thinking, oh, this might be close because Pete the Jet Guerrero, whatever his nickname was, he was the best running back in the nation.
Yeah, so I think it's kind of maybe something like that where the Southeastern has one really, really good player. I think he's better than the Jet. But so I'll say JMU wins it 55-28.
Okay, is at any point in this game, is it close?
Like with I think
a,
maybe.
With a final score of 55-28, probably not. But like, is there time when it's like 21-14 or something?
I could see him hanging around for a little. I think my thing is like if they can't stop the run, they've shown some struggles at times, Southeastern doing that. Like that's really been JMU's red zone issue is they aren't getting a lot of push. I think they're going to get more push in this game. So if they do that, I don't see any reason why they wouldn't score a bunch of touchdowns. They just came off a game when they scored 56. They just had a bye week. Like, I don't know. I think they're probably pretty ready. And I don't think that the coaching staff necessarily overlooked Florida A&M, but my guess is a lot of the advanced scouting was on Southeastern, knowing that that's a better football team. So, yeah, I think it sets up well for JMU, a defense that isn't all that good. I do think they'll find ways to score on JMU's secondary, though.
Yeah, I agree. Just to put it a little bit into perspective, Southeastern allows about 5 yards per carry on the ground, and they allow about 150 yards on the ground per game. So they're not the best rush defense. I think JMU wins it. I think it's a little bit closer than what you're expecting. I think maybe like a 45-35 type of game.
Hey, I can see it. I can see it.
I just think if they scheme properly, and their coach sounds like a very competent coach that understands how to scheme, they know that the defensive line is going to get pressure. They're going to get into the face of Cole Kelly very often and very quickly. So they can get quick hitters, which has had, I mean, even against Morehead State to start the season, Morehead State was moving the ball with quick hitters, and then it's Morehead State, so they weren't able to capitalize. But if they can kind of scheme that open and get guys quick outs, quick slants, and just quick hitters and move the ball down the field, which against Florida A&M, they had those longer methodical drives that weren't big chunk plays. I don't think they're going to get chunk plays against this JMU defense because with chunk plays, you need time for it to develop, and the defensive line just isn't going to give them time. So if they can take advantage of that first second and a half after the ball is snapped, then I think they'll be able to move the ball. With that being said, I think JMU will score more points and win the game.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I'm also kind of interested because I know it's what, essentially like a 4-2-5 that JMU runs with like, using a bunch of safeties and whatnot.
Safety that roves is like a rover, I think they call it, which is a linebacker that can float down into the box on run plays.
I'm not opposed to someone spying Cole Kelly. Like, I think that
word is not in anyone's vocabulary, and you know it. They refused to spy Trey Lance, and they sent him up on an icy field, not even collapsing the box.
That's just like, I don't know. Fine. I'm interested to see how this goes because he's the most dynamic quarterback they've faced all year. I don't think it's close. No offense to Daniel Smith, but Daniel Smith like does the things he's supposed to do correctly, and they're a more well-rounded team than SLU. But like this, Cole Kelly's a better quarterback than Daniel Smith.
Cole Kelly's the best quarterback we've faced, JMU has faced since the national championship.
Yes.
Like by far. No offense to Eric Schmidt of Sam Houston. No offense to Daniel Smith. No offense to Davis Cheek. I'm trying to think of other quarterbacks they've played that has name recognition. No offense to those guys, but I think Cole Kelly. Who?
Joe Mancuso.
They didn't play him this year, though.
Did he play him last year, though?
Nolan Henderson.
Yeah. See, well, they didn't play. Did they ever play Henderson? I don't remember who they played in 20 whatever. So they might have not played either.
They might have played Mancuso last year
because they've played a bunch of backups this year.
Yeah, that's what. Yeah, exactly. There's a stretch of, I mean, we've talked about it probably way too much. The stretch of Weber State, Villanova, Richmond, Delaware, they all had backups in.
I'm tempted to change my prediction. I will say that Southeastern, they're what, 9-3, I think. Yeah, 9-3 with a playoff win. All three losses are by 3 points. So they haven't really gotten skunked this year. Now, they haven't played a team like JMU, but.
It's also worth mentioning last week, Rob talked about it. They only allowed 98 yards of total offense in the first half to Florida A&M. Florida A&M by no means is JMU, and they also had a shutout going for like 55 of the 60 minutes, a few garbage time touchdowns.
They're a fascinating team.
Like, if they have kind of figured stuff out.
I'm sneaky scared of them now.
I love how talking it out makes you scared.
Well, I was scared before, and then I was like, oh, they're not going to be able to stop them. I actually think, though, let me say, I'll say 55-38. I'll give them an extra 10 points. I think, so they played Southern Illinois. That was their, I guess that was in the playoffs. It wouldn't make sense if it wasn't in the playoffs. Their loss in the spring season, at least it looks like it would be in the playoffs, right? I don't know, but I don't know. Honestly, who could say? Let me look up the
– Was it their last game of the season? I don't think they made the playoffs last year.
That's what I didn't think either. Oh, they just wanted to test their mettle against – okay, so not a playoff game. They played Southern Illinois in Carbondale, 55-48 loss, but a really competitive game. They played Sam Houston to open last spring, and it was a 43-38 loss. Like, they played good teams really well.
Here's the thing. I think their offense is going to score. That's why I think it's going to be like a 10-point game. I don't think JMU is going to be able to necessarily pull away and win this one easily, because – for every right hook JMU is going to throw, they're going to come back with their own left jab, you know?
Yeah, JMU's got to find a way to get some stops and make some plays, and they also need to score touchdowns. That's going to be really a big thing. It's just, if you can score touchdowns in the red zone instead of field goals, make sure you're getting sevens, because it feels like a shootout waiting to happen. So I'm excited for this game. I think it's got a chance to be competitive and interesting.
If you were the ESPN BPI predictor of this game, what
percent? Well, it would be the FPI. It would be their football power index.
Oh, sorry. Sorry about that. What percentage chance are you giving Southeastern to win?
21.9.
All right. Okay, I dig it.
That's probably high. I don't know. I think
high. I'd go higher. I'd say 38%.
I don't.
38.12%.
I wouldn't be like pulling my hair out, like, what just happened? If JMU lost, I would be surprised, though. Like, I would be surprised because their defense is going to have to do, like, I don't think JMU's given up 50.
In what time frame? But what's the
entire game?
Yes, and since when?
No, I don't think they're going to give up 50.
Oh.
I think. Like, they're not going to give up 50, and they should score a lot. So I would be surprised, because I think they have a legitimate chance to score 50.
Yes.
They're just a much better all-around team.
The thing is that worries me is that if they settle for field goals, that's not going to win this game.
Well, I think the thing that worries me is kind of going off of that. They seem way too content. Like, do you think Cignetti will actually – like change his ways at all, where it's like, hey, field goals don't mean anything today.
Why would he change his ways now?
Because he wants the Oklahoma job.
Oh, that's it. Okay. No, apparently all the Virginia Tech fans in our mentions, Kurt Cignetti's going there.
They say that?
There's one person that said, can't wait to sign your coach tomorrow.
Maybe they meant Houston. Houston has floated as a candidate for them.
Cool.
I would love that to happen. I'd be interested to see how that would work out.
Houston and Brooks in the same coaching
plan. Oh, yeah, they're stealing all our coaches, trying to go for Byington next, although Mike Young's pretty good. Anyway, I don't know. I just have a hard time seeing JMU losing. It wouldn't be like crazy, crazy stunning. Southeastern doesn't strike me as a team that's going to get any stops.
Yeah, 100% I agree with that. And with that, I think that's a good – jumping off point to move into our next topic. CUSA TV.
Yes, CUSA TV, which you've all been hoping we would speak about. So, JMU men's basketball, they play Florida Atlantic on Sunday. It's on CUSA TV. I knew it for like a full 24 hours. I was like, all right, you got to pay $7 to watch this thing. I was like, I'm not going to do it.
Ticket, I feel like at the Atlanta Bank Center.
I was like, I'm not going to do it. There's no reason to pay $7 to watch mediocre basketball. And then our friend Brian Reese said that he had paid and was watching. And I was going to get upset if he was texting us. And I didn't really know what was happening. So I was like, all right, I'm paying $7. I want to be included. FOMO. So I spent $7. And this announcer is just, I don't want to say reckless, but at one point he like roasts the CAA about how they handled the thing with JMU. At one point, multiple times actually, he's going off on the refs where he's like, that guy got clobbered. How do you not call that? Or like they would miss shot clock violation or something and they would end up going scoring on. And he goes, and FAU takes advantage of the incompetent officiating. Essentially what he said. He basically did. At one point, Vado Morse got hit like across the face and had a pretty, you know, exuberant reaction falling down. He's like, Morse got fouled and acts like he got hit by a crowbar. So, the guy was awesome. He was overly dramatic for sure. Jamie wins the game by 4. So they came out of their little Florida trip, which included the neutral site Naples tournament, 2-2. They're 6-2 in the season. They got Eastern Mennonite, so it's a huge rivalry week this week. And
they came out of Naples 1-2.
No, the whole Florida trip. So the Boca Raton, I'm counting. And then 1-2 in the Naples, and then they beat FAU. So they're 2-2 in Florida.
Okay. Thank you.
Now they got a rivalry week, Jack. They got EMU, who they were once tied with at halftime a few years ago.
I thought that was Bridgewater.
No, it was EMU.
Okay.
We all remember it. We all remember it vividly, clearly. We all remember it. Just like we'll never forget the Matthew Erbach 3. There are some memories that live in infamy in JMU basketball lore. And this is one of them. But after that, they play UVA. We'll both be at that game. It's like, I guess you'll probably listen to this maybe on a Tuesday. So it'll be a week from if you're listening on a Tuesday. I don't want to say I'm souring on this team, but I think we probably got to spend 5 minutes talking about some concerns.
Okay. I didn't watch the Florida Atlantic game. I watched part of the Murray State game. The last game I watched completely, I think, was Wright State, maybe?
Sure.
It was one of those. But your concerns are very valid. I'm excited to let you just kind of rant about these concerns. And then I'll do my best to talk you off the cliff because I haven't fully soured on them. Because at the end of the day, they're gutting out wins. They're getting wins. So just hit me. This is your therapy session. Let it out about men's basketball, and I'll try to help.
They turn the ball over so much.
Yeah, like, yeah, I can't help you there. They do that a lot.
It's gotten a little better. Like, it's gotten a little bit better. I will give them that. But it's like there's just a lot of really sloppy turnovers in some of these games. Like, there are so many unforced mistakes. The other thing is, like, they kind of stink at shooting the three. Like, if you take away the Carlo game, which I think you should, they're, what is that, 47 of 159 from three. And I'll do the math to see what that actually is. But it's not good. So they're shooting, yeah, they're shooting just below 30% from three in games not against NAIA schools. That's not good. Like, that's just not good. They're not shooting it well from three at all. They don't have a big guy, so they can't block shots, which if you look at, like, KenPom, defensively their biggest issue is that they literally don't block anything. So they're giving up those. They give up some offensive rebounds. The numbers aren't quite as bad as they could be offensive rebounding-wise. But, God, I mean, they're, like, they're really not great from three. They hit some more against Florida Atlantic. They were 10 of 23. But down the stretch, it looked like they were trying to lose the game. They're making some really stupid mistakes. Against Kent State, they did not shoot the ball well. Against Wright State, they did not shoot the ball well. And the biggest thing is they've got guys who shouldn't be shooting threes, chucking threes.
Hit me with the breakdown of threes that you texted earlier.
Okay.
This breakdown is kind of eye-opening, and I think this is where the root of the problem is.
Yeah, so Jalen Hodge and Charles Faldon are probably the best three-point shooters on the team. I think that's
– Yeah, 100%.
I think when you watch the game, you see their motion – it's like, all right, they're the better three-point shooters. Charles Faldon or Chuck Faldon and Jalen Hodge.
That's Chuck, baby.
They're 31 of 65, which is like a really good percentage. Just under 50%, 31 divided by 65. 47.7% from three, which is just absurd. So those two guys are really phenomenal from beyond the arc. Jalen Hodges shooting 51, almost 52% from three.
Also worth mentioning, sorry to interrupt, but Chuck Faldin is like near perfect in shots under a minute from the corner to tie it. Like his clutch gene is
really clutch. He's hit a bunch of huge shots and made really good plays down the stretch. He was an awesome transfer addition. But you've also got, you know, Vadomorse, who is not a bad shooter, I don't think, but he's struggling this year big time. He's shooting 26% from three and he's taken 50. He's the only guy who's taken 40 and he's taken 50. So he's taking significantly higher volume and not making those shots. You look at the way he played against Florida Atlantic. It was maybe the favorite game of mine that he played all season long. He scored a good amount against Eastern Kentucky, but other than that game, he was 2-8 against FAU, but he only took two threes. So he had, I think he had three assists. He didn't turn the ball over. His assists were awesome. He was making the extra pass. Like when he does that and isn't going out of his way to shoot threes, I think he's a really, really good player. You don't need him taking nine threes a game, especially if he's not hot. So that's something where I'd like to see him continue to do that. I think it makes the offense better and makes the team better. Another player, Tekal Molson, Seton Hall transfer. He's shooting 6 of 25. From three. He's never been a great three-point shooter. He doesn't have much arc on his shot, but he's bigger than most mid-major players. 6'4", 210. Honestly, looks bigger, attacks the rim really well, and has been reasonably effective doing that. I'd much rather see him do that than try to shoot a bunch of threes. You got Julian Wooden, who's shooting like 60% or above from two-point range, and he's taken a bunch of threes. He's 5 of 24 from three. He's already taken half as many three-pointers as he took last year in 20 games, and they've only played, what, 8 games this year. So he's taken maybe a higher volume than we like to see. He's not making a ton of them. So I think that's something to keep an eye on is them and their shooting. Then you've also got Terrence Edwards and Terrell Strickland. They're combined for 2 of 20 from three-point range. They're significantly more efficient from two-point range, which is where they should probably do the bulk of their damage. So I guess my issue is you've got Faldin and Hodge really should be the guys who are taking threes and the other guys should be trying to get to the rim. And I've been a little surprised and maybe disheartened at times when you've got someone who's shooting 20% from three and they keep firing him up when their teammate might be open who's shooting 45% from three.
Yeah, I don't know what national writer tweeted it, but there was a national writer watching one of Jamie's games, probably I think a mid-major national writer, but he just, I think it was either about Molson or Morris where he was like, I don't know who told them that they have an ultra green light where they can shoot it at any point when they cross the timeline, but they need to have that revoked. And I kind of agree with that.
It's just, it's an interesting thing. Cause I think Morris is a better shooter than he's shown, but he's taken 98 shots this year. The next closest guy is like Faldin is Faldin with 65.
Yeah.
They've both made 29 shots and he's taken 33 more.
I think it's so. Here's my thing. Like, I hear what you're saying. I get it 100%. Their turnovers are an issue. However, they still have a better than one assist to turnover ratio, and they're turning opponents over at a very high clip.
They do
opponents have a 0.7 assist to turnover ratio. They've forced 145 turnovers so far. That's 18 a game, which is a fantastic mark. And that's a little inflated off of Carlo, but even watching against Eastern Kentucky, against Florida Atlantic, against everyone, they've done a really good job at turning the opponent over. And when they do, when they can get into those fast breaks, when they can kind of do those quick change offenses, that's when they start to really take over games. That's when their skill is really on display. It's when they're in half court and they have to create offense. They have no one. It just seems like it's almost like the same problem with the women's team. It's just stagnant. They try to play ISO ball. They try to go have their offense go through one person. They end up settling for a bad three.
Yeah.
Like you could feed it. You know, you could feed it down low to Molson. You could feed it down low to Wooden or even Amadi or Sule and let them go to work. Like, I think them slashing to the basket, having more off ball movement, having more movement in general, I think would really benefit this team instead of, you know, high screens that you then try to get a, like they look like me playing 2K when I have a 99 overall three-point shooter, you know?
Yeah, they definitely got to get better at that. And some of it is they really don't want to have a true post. Like Amadi and Sule can do some stuff down there, but they're like,
they don't have post moves. They don't have post foot. No offense to them. They're really athletic, really good, really jumpy, but they're not, yeah, they're not post players. They don't have the post footwork. They can't back you down in the low post and just put up a baby hook.
Sule's got the most of that on the team, but he's probably not giving you, right? He scored in double digits three times. One was Carlo. The other two, he scored exactly 10 points. He's not really a volume shooter in the post, so he's not necessarily someone you're feeding the ball to down there. So I think that's like the biggest thing. We said that in the offseason. Like, they don't have a true five, and I think that's going to come back to bite them this year. I will say, I think the shooting is going to improve as a team. I think Morris will get better. I don't hate Wooden's jumper. It's just he's been so good attacking the rim that if you're missing threes, like, don't settle.
He's also a bigger guy. He's like Molson. I think he's 6'8" and like has good moves to get to the basket. Like, you don't have to settle.
Yeah, that's where Wooden should definitely attack a little more with that 6'8" size. So I don't know. We'll see how it develops. I think I'm not like sour on the team. I really like them. I just think there's a maybe an element of too much excitement, or like the at-large talk was super annoying a few weeks ago. And people were like, well, if they do this, they're, like, they're not an at-large team.
Even if they went undefeated, their strength of – I mean, they would have made it if they went undefeated. But, like, one, that's never happening. And, two, they just are terrible. If they went undefeated, they'd be, like, a 14 seed at-large. Like, the strength of schedule would have just been atrocious. Their best team they play is UVA. Not named UVA. It's Mason.
Mason's up there. Murray State's pretty highly rated.
Oh, Murray State. I forgot. Yeah. Which they had like a 15-point lead in that one, right?
They had a good lead early and ended up getting smoked in the second half, just absolutely run out of the gym. They were giving up, struggling to stop people from scoring 2-point shots, which again, I think goes back to not having a true big. So I'm interested to see how the team develops, but also how the program develops long-term, because it feels like they definitely have one of the better teams in recent memory, but that's not saying a lot. And it's interesting to me because, like, are they significantly better than, like, a good Brady year? Or is that kind of where they are? Because the Rowe era, I felt like it set the program back a little bit because they fired Brady after winning 21 games and then said, we want to take it on the next step. The next step was just falling off a cliff and not becoming any good at basketball. So they've got kind of a long way to go to become, like, a legit top 100 team.
Yeah. I think long-term, they are set to grow into that. I think right now, in year two, coming out of a COVID year with Mark Byington and a team full of transfers because they're still trying to, you know, recruit a team because they lost all their homegrown recruits when Roe left. And I think they're the best team I can recall. I only was at JMU for one of the Brady years, his 21-win season. But, like, kind of looking back, like, I think they're a darn good team. They're probably not as good as, what, 2013 when they won the first four game and then got blown out by Indiana. But I think they're an overall really solid team. And when you look at, like, kind of the grand scheme of things, year two of Byington, all these transfers. And, I mean, Faldon is a fantastic transfer from Winthrop. Molson was a sought-after mid-major transfer. And so was Tyree E. Hinacho.
Yep, and he came back in.
And I wanted to get your take on him. You and Brian both seemed to be a little bit high on him as he was going through. He could really facilitate the offense. Was there anything that really stood out to you about him and his addition to the offense, or is it just a nice piece to have a guard who can, you know, facilitate an offense and play really good defense?
Yeah, it's not like he had the best game of his life or anything, but he's 6'4", like a little bit under 200, but he's a bigger point guard option than Strickland and Morse. Like, he's got more size to him. So he played, you know, at North Dakota last year. He had about 9 points a game, 4 assists, and almost 6 rebounds. And that's kind of what stands out is, like, I think he can rebound a little bit, which is going to help his undersized team. He shot 35% from three, struggled a little bit at the free throw line, but he's not the best pure shooter necessarily, but he does more things. He's a little bit in that same way that, like, Terrence Edwards isn't maybe the best shooter on the team, but he does a lot of things well. Yeah. And that's kind of what it strikes me as, another guy like that who's got a little more size, who can do some nice things. So I do think he's a good addition. I will say, just going back on the quick point, they were top 100 according to KenPom. They were 91st in 2016. I think that's the last time they've ended a year in the top 100. They're really close in 2011 too. But this year, right now, they're 173 in KenPom. They've certainly got a chance to improve.
Yeah, and I don't think they'll finish as a top 100 team this year by any means. But I think 100% this team is on the right trajectory.
Yes.
I think it's really exciting. I mean, there's a lot to improve. There's a lot to fix. And I think Byington understands that. He's not stupid. But he fixed it last season. At the beginning of last season, there were some problems. And by the end of it, they were darn good, especially in the CAA. And I mean, what, they had like a 15-point lead against Elon, and then Dustin Buford or whoever it was for Elon decided to hit every three under the sun. So they're on the right trajectory. Who knows? Maybe next year or in 2 years, they're a top 100 team easily. They might start the season in 2 years as a top 100 team. I expect them to – I think they kind of dominate CAA competition outside of maybe Hofstra, maybe Northeastern. Hofstra looks like they're a good program. But I think they're on the right trajectory. They might finish as like a high 100 team or a low 100 team. You know what I mean? They're going to be close to 100.
Yeah, I think that's kind of the point that I'm maybe more so making, is just like to temper expectations. Like there are really
this isn't, this won't be an at-large team for probably years. I mean, when was the last time the Sun Belt had two bids? Like the Sun Belt isn't a they're not a two-bid league.
No. And I think like the main thing is like what you have to do is you got to be really good at home, and right now they're 3-0, and you got to find a way to be more competitive on the road. They're horrible on the road during the row era. They weren't particularly good at home either, but they were horrible on the road. So I think that's something to keep an eye on, is can they be really good at home? Can they be more competitive on the road? I'm excited about
that. They're really good on the road this season, man. They're 3-0 at home, 2-0 on the road. Their only two losses were at neutral sites. So all I'm saying is when March Madness comes around, they have some problems.
They're an interesting team. I think they'll get better. I don't know how much that UVA game is going to be actually competitive, but
whoa.
That's kind of why I'm souring, because it's like the schedule really doesn't have any marquee games except that one. I think they've got maybe a chance to hang around. I don't know. I'm starting to worry about that.
Well, Jane, you started so well, and UVA started so poorly. It seemed like the perfect, and we hyped ourselves up. I think if you asked us at the beginning of the season, would you be happy if JMU stuck around against UVA? You'd be like, yeah. And then for the first week of college basketball, you're like, we can win that game. And now after 2.5-3 weeks of college basketball, you're sitting there and you're like, oh, so UVA still can play really good defense and they're probably going to beat us and we'll be lucky if we stick around. But if you had told us that 4 weeks ago, we would have been really excited.
I'm still holding on to hope that maybe something crazy will happen, but
if they hit their shots, they win. I mean, if they score more points than UVA, they win the game.
That's so true. And then I'm hoping they do some nice things in conference action. I think a 21 season would be really good. I don't know. I do think they can keep getting better and improving. So excited to watch the program grow. Like you mentioned, I think you made some fair points. They're going to get better. They're moving in the right direction, which was not true in years prior. With different coaches. So,
and with that being said, this is a different team than last season. This is a new team to last season. So you can't really expect Byington to come in and pick up where they left off last year, because you lost one of the best players in recent memory in JMU history and Matt Lewis. You're moving Morse to more of a number one option in the offense, and you brought in all of these key contributors through the transfer portal. This is a completely new team. So it's kind of like starting back from square one. So you just got to give it some time.
Yeah, for sure. And quick women's rant.
Let it out. This one I have no solutions for, because their assist to turnover ratio is so bad, and they just got ran out of the gym by Buffalo for the second straight year.
I'm very disappointed in how they played through six games. I'll say that. I think they're way more capable than how they have played. Like losing to Maryland by a lot was no surprise. The Virginia win was nice, but then like Liberty's a team they could have beaten. Lost in OT, fought really hard. Picked up a couple nice wins over teams that are not as good as them. But then like the Buffalo, another one, like that's a game kind of like Liberty. You can get it. You could lose it. You know, they're up 26-19 at halftime and they lose 62-45. They're 1 of 18 from three. They turn the ball over 19 times. Like that's, you're never going to win if you play like that. And that's just, it's kind of frustrating, because I think they're better than how they played. It's still really early. They got a long way to go, but it's another team that, like, if you're a JMU fan, like, please, please, I don't want to hear anything about an at-large. Like, I don't want to hear that anymore. I think it was like a pipe dream at the beginning of the year that was like, maybe if they find a way to really beat up on some, like, I don't think it's even in the conversation right now, and I don't think it should be. They're not looking good at all. And I'm kind of surprised and disappointed because I think they have a chance to be really good. It's still early, so I'm still interested to track this team, but I was really high on them coming into this year. So to see them kind of floundering a little bit and losing like 17 points when you have a halftime lead against a mid-major that you just lost to last year, but you think you're probably going to try to have a good chance to bounce back from, I don't know. I mean, Paige McDaniel has not come back yet. That'll certainly help. She's a really good scorer, but she's, I don't know exactly what her injury is, but man, just really, I don't know. I thought they'd be off to a better start.
Yeah, they have 47 assists this season to 105 turnovers.
What's the three-point percentage?
And they're shooting 21% from three.
They're taking a lot of them.
They've taken 125, which is about a third of their total shots.
Yeah. It's frustrating. I think they're
settling for jumpers, for contested jumpers. They're not moving the ball well around, and when they do move the ball around, it turns into a turnover. Like, there's potential for the team, and it's kind of like what we talked about all of last season. There's potential there. They have talent. They just are sloppy.
That's kind of what's bothered me, I guess, with watching both teams kind of significantly. As you turn these games on, they're just like flailing and throwing the ball out of bounds.
They want to run one of the fastest tempos in the nation, both of these teams, it seems like. Yes. And neither one can control the ball. And it's like, can we just – not be the fastest team in the nation? We can be a top 50 team in the nation if we can just hold on to the darn ball.
Yeah, they've got a chance Thursday night. They're playing at GW. That is a chance to be one of the lower scoring games you'll ever see in your life. GW has played some stinkers this year. Real slow scoring. So that one's got a chance to be a little bit gnarly. I think they played some kind of gnarly ones with them in the past. Yeah, they had a 50. That's what I'm remembering. They had a 50-37 win, JMU did, in 2018 against them. So kind of could be a similar style matchup here. But, I mean, we'll see what happens. They're going to beat a lot of conference teams. They're going to beat a lot of teams in the CAA, just like I think the men will. But it's a matter of, like, can you get the program to be, like, the best it can be? And I do think in the future, like, the expectation should be to have one, if not both, the men's and women's team in the NCAA tournament.
I agree. I agree with you wholeheartedly. Anything else you want to hit?
No.
Any quick headlines? I have to see if we missed any headlines.
JMU's going to the Sun Belt.
Really?
Yeah.
Is that why they can't compete in anything?
Spencer Rattler's coming to JMU.
Spencer Rattler did officially enter the transfer portal. Next up, Caleb Williams will be too.
Interested to see. Yeah, we could get both. Interested to see how Rattler develops under Cignetti. I think he'll be a really good backup to Billy Atkins. Just a matter of if he's willing to take that role.
Well, Rattler already has the experience being a backup, so.
He handled that pretty well for himself. He seems like from some other things, like his QB1, he was not a very polite person.
I didn't watch QB1, so.
He was kind of a jerk. So, but he seemed to accept the backup role well. But, yeah, sometimes people don't like his personality. He seems like a little abrasive.
All right, so we'll end the podcast on talking about Spencer Rattler's personality. For Bennett Conlon, my name is Jack Fitzpatrick. JMU football plays Southeastern Louisiana football this weekend on Saturday. Kickoff time is 2 p.m., so tune in on ESPN Plus and see you guys at the JMU UVA basketball game. Will we have a podcast before then?
Might do it after, right?
Might do it after. We might do a live recording in our Airbnb.
We could do it. We should bring mics. Let's do it Tuesday night at like 11 o'clock from an Airbnb.
All right. You guys have a wonderful rest of your week. See ya.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.